Welcome to the Calm Nights, Strong Days podcast. With over 30 years in the health and wellness industry, I've realized there's no one-size-fits-all solution for sleep and stress resilience. What affects one person's sleep and ability to handle stress is different for each of us. The stage of life you're in, work and home stressors, and more all affect how your body handles stress and your quality of life. Join me as we explore a variety of tools, strategies, and solutions I've employed with clients over the years in solo episodes, as well as insightful interviews and experts. Together, we'll unravel more pieces of the puzzle, empowering you on your journey to calm nights and strong days. So let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Calm Nights, Strong Days podcast. I am your host, Andy Clark. Last week, I did an episode for kids and about how kids with big emotions, and it went really well. I got a lot of really great feedback. And so today, what I am going to talk about is the hidden stressors that causes kids' anxiety and outbursts. Last week, I spoke of how and their nervous system, their stress system, how it gets taxed. And when it gets taxed, that can cause outbursts. Now, today we're going to go that next level and we're going to dive into different reasons, different things that can stress out. And there are so many. I know that when I started diving into this in my life, my personal life with my stress system and then my kids, it is amazing how many different stressors there are out there and how many I had no idea about, none. And so my hope today is that you hearing about them, I'm not going to go in depth on any of them. And my hope is that you hearing about these stressors will help you to see that maybe your child or yourself has experienced these stressors or is currently experiencing them, because you can't help them until you actually know what their stressors are. So I'm hoping that by going into that, you will see some of the stressors that you may not even know about, hidden stressors in your kids. And I'm going to give you a list. You should not be experiencing all of the stressors in the list. Well, some kids do, as I'm looking at this list. Yeah, there are kids that I work with that definitely do cover all of these. You may have a child, or you may be somebody that really resonates with one, even just one of them, and not all of them. That's okay. All right. So I am so excited. And oh, one thing I forgot to tell you as well is that because of the recognition, because of the feedback I got last week, I started a Facebook group. So it's a Facebook group called Kids with Big Emotions. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. So if you do have a child that resonates with any of these, come into the Facebook group. When you join, I will ask you what it is that you resonated with so that I know what I should be speaking about more, what I should be helping you with more, what I should be diving into more into this podcast episode. So go into those show notes and click that link and join that Facebook group. So let's go into these reasons. Actually, first off, there is an analogy that my son's gym teacher at one point he gave, and I'm like, that is such a good analogy. He was saying that certain kids in the class, like they all, it's almost like an elastic. You can pull the elastic, which is their stress system. You can pull that elastic so far and then it snaps back. Thing is some kids, you can only pull it a little bit before it snaps. And some kids, you can pull it a lot before it snaps. So what happens is the more stressors that are piled up on somebody, these hidden stressors, things we don't think of, the more that these are piled up, we have to think of it that that child or that adult, their stress system is already being pulled. That elastic is being pulled and stretched already. before other things happen. So when there is another stress introduced in their day, and there's tons introduced in our day, when another stress is introduced to them, if their elastic is so stretched, they can't pull that anymore before it's going to snap back. So that is such a great way of describing this with our kids. So that's where, if you think of, if you have only one thing that you relate to on this, you may be able to stress out, experience more stressors before it snaps back. Whereas somebody who has many of these that I'm going to be speaking of, it will snap back a lot sooner because it's already being stretched with every single one. So let's dive in. The first one that I have is hearing too much. And this is the fascinating thing. So you may have a child who, like, you think sometimes, wow, how did they hear me saying that? Like upstairs in another room, somewhere else, how did they hear that? And there's other times you're standing right beside them and they can't hear you. You could be doing the dishes, running water. They could be watching TV and they can't hear anything around them. And sometimes with these kids, they actually start having some ADHD symptoms, which somebody, a guru that I do follow, Linda Silverman, has said that earlier in her career, she actually thought everybody was misdiagnosed with ADHD and that they actually had this auditory processing struggle, this where it's overhearing. But through her career, she has seen some true ADHD patients. The problem is that doctors just say, oh, that's ADHD. It's like a quick assessment. They don't assess for both to see if, you know, to rule out an APD, auditory processing disorder. So they treat it as if it's ADHD. But when you're hearing a lot, or you're hearing different things from one ear and another, but a lot. So you might be taking in a conversation in one ear and a conversation in the other ear. And you're taking in so much more than people in a day. You struggle to focus, you struggle to sit still, and you get really overwhelmed easily. Sounds being in areas affect you. There can be, it can go as far as misophonia, where they could be upset for hearing somebody chew or slight tapping. Just not even, I don't think you can hear what I'm doing on the table. But there are some kids that if you're doing that, or just the sighing in the class, you know, a chair squeaking, every reverberation they hear. They might struggle in gyms to hear anything that anyone's saying. So the teacher might think that they have behavior issues or they're being defiant. Meanwhile, they really can't hear because all the reverberations and all of the sounds. Might be hockey arenas, swimming pools might cause issues, but the kid might be a lot better outside because sounds aren't reverberating as much. Old schools that reverberate might cause issues. And so this audio is fascinating too, because this child might seem like they're not listening at times. So it's suggested, hey, go get them for a hearing test. And they're back, oh, their hearing's fine. And that's where it is about going to certain specialists that actually, and there's far and few between them, who specialize in overhearing. Most of them are underhearing. So they need to have certain equipment for overhearing. And I'm in an APD group, an auditory processing group on Facebook, and it is amazing when these kids get a hearing aid that is able to equalize the left and right ear, if that was a struggle, and to lower all the sounds and vibrations and noises. They're actually lowering the sound so that these kids aren't constantly overwhelmed. Parents talk about the anxiety and all of that. It's phenomenal, the difference, but it is amazing how overhearing can be something. So some kids just, people don't normally think about it, but when they're in crowds, when they're overwhelmed, and they don't like to go near big sounds, it's definitely something to look into. This can also happen visually. So it could be mixed with them having such a strong memory processing that they visually take in so much, that they auditorily or visually take in so much with their processing, that if a child is not, doesn't have the emotional shoot, even as an adult, the amount that they can take in can be so much. Like a child can, like if I'm walking through the schoolyard, I'm only noticing what I'm looking at. Like I'm looking at one individual or one little, like some kids chasing a ball, but I don't even notice everything. But somebody who has that visual like really crazy memory processing. They see so much. They see almost everything that every kid is doing on that field, in the schoolyard. It's crazy. Like they can see a small little image of something on the back of a book. They might have three or four or five little pictures or something. And as you're reading a book, they'll go, oh, that's the picture. Or if it's a picture that's inside the book somewhere, oh, that's on page such and such, right? Like it's just crazy. They can walk into a room and notice that you've moved something. I have a child that notices when a bag of, so if we've eaten chips, we put them on the top of the fridge. And if they go to bed and I eat the bag of chips, my son will come home downstairs in the morning and he'll just be walking in the kitchen and go, oh, who ate those chips? I'm like, how did you notice that? Like, it's not, there's other things like you can't necessarily, it's not like you can like, it's like a full on chips that you can see. They notice when I change even the angle of my ponytail. Like it's just fascinating and it blows me away, but it can be overwhelming. I was hearing, speaking with somebody today where they were telling about their child who's 10 years old, who was noticing in the class all the differences of the kids. Some child was having bruises frequently. And like they were being abused. Some child was not feeling any guilt at all and any remorse for anything. Another child was struggling with something else and they could notice these things and they told the teacher. And then they noticed as well that a day or two later, that child did start seeing the counselors and stuff at school. And then she notices changes in behaviors. That's a 10-year-old. That's a lot for a 10-year-old to take in. It's a lot for them to process. It's a lot for them to understand, which can also be part of the empathic stuff. So some of these kids feel feelings as well. They feel them different. They see them different in how they take them in. Some of them just know how somebody's feeling. Some of them can actually physically feel the emotions. This child that I work with that when they stand beside this one boy who is really struggling, his parents have gone through a divorce and he's really struggling. And this child, when they stand beside him, is like, I feel a ball. I feel like this ball is bouncing inside me. And I just want to yell at somebody and scream and just hit people. And this individual does sometimes in class when they're around them. So we've taught that individual to go beside somebody who's so calm. Her energy is so calm and peaceful. And he goes and stands beside her and the ball stops bouncing. So it's just fascinating how these kids can take in so much. Their emotional, mental maturity is so not there to be able to handle these things. Whereas even for adults, a lot of this stuff can be overwhelming. So you get where they're just so overwhelming. Going back to as well, the audio processing. So with some autistics, there's actually a really great, I'm going to write this down. I'm going to see if I can find it. A Mark Rober video. I'm going to put it in the show notes if I can. It's on his autistic son, and it actually shows what his son sees visually, what he can see, what he's experiencing. And so it's basically where autistics, he said, autistics don't necessarily look you in the eyes, in your face when they're talking, because there's so much stimulation. Like they see everything. They see every movement of your face, every hair on your, like on your face, on your head. Like the colors, all the colors, all the everything. And it can be so overwhelming that it takes time for them to be able to look at you. Quite a bit of time. And it depends on if you're in a new environment every time, because they have to take in that environment as well. So there's so much to that, that we don't really realize that some of our kids are experiencing. Being highly sensitive as well. That's where that empathic, that intuitiveness, like sometimes your kids just no, they feel for others. You may have a child who at a very young age, like I know there's a client who was talking about their child when they could crawl, not even walk, and the mom was sick on the couch. And this is a child that's not verbally speaking, actually brought them a little bottle of medicine. Like this is where they're so empathic and intuitive and geared into their environment. that once they step outside of your house, it's like whoosh, this whole sensory overload. Then we can go a whole other direction where we're talking about environmental toxins and scents. Now, I've done episodes on this because this is hugely me and hugely one of my kids. So basically, synthetic fragrances, they're trademarked. And so they don't have to disclose what is actually in ingredients of a synthetic fragrance. So any perfumes, any scents in like fabric softeners and all of our washing stuff, all of our cleaning products, they're all trademarked. There's a really, I'm going to write this down too. It's called Stink. And it's a Netflix movie. I'm writing that down. I'll put that in the show notes. So with the movie Stink, it actually dives into how all these lobbyists and all that keep the ingredients hidden. Now, the thing is that most people smell them and most people are like, oh, these smell good, right? And but there are people like myself and people like my son who, when we smell them, we change. Medusa comes out in me. I get angry. There was once where we walked in the house. We walked in the main floor from the front. Now, our entrance to the basement is in the back of the house and the stairs go down. We walked in the house and instantly my youngest and I said, what's that smell? And I looked at my husband and we were having a great time. I looked at him and I started getting angry. I'm like, what's in this house? And like, it was like Medusa. I instantly changed Jekyll and Hyde. And I started yelling at him. I'm like, what is in here? And he instantly knew. He ran down to the basement and grabbed his hockey equipment, of which he had Febrezed, and shoved in a garbage bag, thinking that we wouldn't be able to smell it through the garbage bag. But I guess in that process, it has still gotten in, and brought the bag outside and shoved it in our back shed in the outside. And once he came back in, my youngest son was hitting his brother and yelling at him. So it is fascinating. And so my youngest son too, there was one point in school where he started wearing 2 to 3 shirts, 2 to 3 pairs of pants in senior kindergarten. And after we went for the parent teacher interviews, and I was asking, I'm like, have there been any like changes in the cleaner? She goes, oh yeah, they just started using this new cleaner. That's this really great pine scent. And I'm like, ah. And she was having a chat with me about his outbursts. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, he's been wearing different clothes. Cause in senior kindergarten, they sit on the floor. On the carpet. And he intuitively protecting himself from all of those scents and the outbursts, that it was just a struggle for him to be around that. And so many people sitting there are like, well, but it doesn't affect me. So really, what's the issue? So I kind of relate this to, well, I don't kind of, I do relate this to like a drug sniffing dog. These dogs can smell drugs where most of us cannot. Their scents are phenomenal and they can find them and they're so good at it. They can find bombs. They can find like cadavers. They can find all kinds of things that most other people cannot find. So when that dog is smelling something and barking and saying, hey, I just found what you trained me to find, we don't question it. We're like, oh, wow, must be something there. And that's my son and I. So anyone who is sensitive to scents, like we can't go down the soap aisles or the adjoining aisles. I actually don't go grocery shopping. I used to find that going to shopping malls and airports, I find is another hard one for me, but I definitely love flying. But there's often a lot of stores, perfumes and stuff in airports. And a lot of people wear a lot of cologne and smelly stuff at airports. So I find that there, I know I'm really going to take a hit to my stress system. I know that my kids are, and I don't even go into, in Canada here, we have all closed shopping malls. And I was wondering for the longest time, why am I okay? Like in Florida or in the States where they have like open shopping malls and not okay in like Canadian closed shopping malls. Why do I feel so exhausted and so drained coming out of them? And I realized it's because of all the scents, because when I am going into certain clothing stores, I still do smell some scents, but it's not as bad as perfumes or things that linger and that come out of shop malls and stay in the indoor closed malls. Whereas outside, as soon as the door opens, you have more fresh air coming in and out as well. And I'm so much better. And I keep getting fresh air in between going into stores and I choose which stores to go in and out of based on the smells. So I'm less affected. So it's fascinating. Environmental toxins is a huge one. I have a client as well, where I told them, I was teaching them about this. They changed their cleaners, but then they changed their toothpaste. And he said he could not believe the difference of their kids getting ready for bed. I don't know. He's in England, so I'm not sure what brand they used in England, but I'm going to assume it was something like our Crest or Colgate, or like our top ones here in Canada and North America, but it wasn't toxin free. So he moved to Dr. Bronner's because that's more of a UK brand. In Canada, we use Green Beaver, Dr. Bronner. My kids love them. And it's fascinating, because as soon as those toxins are out of those toothpastes, and you're not putting them in your mouth, it can make a difference. So for some kids, this is nothing. But for quite a few kids that are sensitive, that have stressed nervous systems, they become like that bomb sniffing dog, that drug sniffing dog, and they get really affected by it. So it's that thing where the more you keep adding stressors, the more you can't handle. So if you're very, very stressed, then you may not be able to handle the scents, the fragrances. If you're not that stressed, like I even notice now, as I've worked on my stress system, as I'm feeling so much better, as my HRV, my stress marker has gone up, showing I'm a lot stronger, I'm not as affected at all at airports and stuff, but I do know it still affects me, right? Just because it isn't affecting me as much, or it doesn't affect some people at all, doesn't mean it's still not affecting your health. And these are things that overall over time do affect people as well. So another thing is nutrient deficiency. Now, this is something that I can go into a deep dive with people, where it's all looking at the stress system. There are certain vitamins and minerals that your stress system feeds off of. I'll just give two examples, but there are a lot. They also need to be in the proper ratios with one another. So I know like calcium, magnesium needs to be the proper ratios with each other. Depending on which client I'm working with and how I'm working with them, we may do a hair mineral analysis test. I've done them on my kids and myself. It's just where you pull out little strands of hair and just do the inch closest to your head. And we find out all of their stress vitamins, minerals, and toxins. And so that's where I dive into with nutrition with people. So for example, magnesium, every single time your stress system kicks in, magnesium is released. Every single time that your body is making cortisol, your stress hormone, vitamin C is used to make cortisol. So we find in certain people that are more and more stressed, so people that are more highly sensitive, these vitamins and minerals are quite often lower in them. So finding out where their levels need to be can instantly start fueling their stress system and give them more bandwidth so that they can handle more stressors. We can also get with nutrition as well, we get gut issues. So every time that I've done so many episodes on this as well in the past, is your gut kicks, like every time that your brain perceives a stress, it doesn't have to be a stress that we think like a trauma, but anytime it perceives a stress, your digestion slows down. And over time, your digestion slows down so much that you stop being able to break down vitamins and nutrients as well. So you can't actually be absorbing them. And there's a lot of other things that can go on with your gut. I definitely have other gut gut episodes that I do have on this podcast, diving deep into that. So that is a big one, but we need to decrease the perceived stressors before we can really heal the gut. So some people start going to a gut specialist. I know this was a mistake I made, where I was going to a gut specialist, but I hadn't dealt with all of the stressors yet. And so we kept making headway and kept taking steps back. So it's really important to make sure that you're not just taking a one-way approach to different things. With that too, gluten, dairy are often stressors, sometimes corn with some people. Dyes and colorings are a big one, especially in kids. So so many kids that I work with, just from dyes and colorings and taking those out can make a world of difference. I was speaking as well to actually one of my colleagues a few weeks ago, and he was saying that he found out it was raspberry and stuff, but he realized it was the blue dye in like raspberry flavored candies or raspberry flavored, like candies and stuff. And he could not believe the difference once he took those out. So it's not just a kid thing. But as I said, this is the same thing as that bomb sniffing dog, the drug sniffing dog. Some people can handle these things and some people can't. So it's really understanding which ones are for you or not. Now, trauma is one. I know I've done episodes on this and that. So just recently, I've done quite a few episodes on traumas. The thing with kids, when we're seeing perfectionism, when we're seeing that they're really struggling with like not being coached and stuff, these can be from traumas. So if you have a child that is really good at doing things, is really ahead of things, always ahead of the curve, reading at a high level, doing stuff at a high level, then all of a sudden one day they can't do something. It can be a trauma response in them. And they start thinking, oh my God, I wasn't perfect in this one. Because they're so used to getting everything right that when they're not able to fail. And it's really, really tough. And when you do dive back into it, quite often there was some sort of a trauma that we never even considered with these kids that can come out there as well with traumas. A child may be covering up a learning disability. So what you also do get with gifted kids that are really high level, and this was such a learning curve for me in coming into this world, is you have our schools often test for average gifted. And average gifted is that kid that's just above average, where they're really good at subjects. They don't have a lot of struggles. Their focus is really good. And so they can ace these tests that the school has them doing for giftedness. Thing is that the higher that you go with gifted, the more there is another struggle usually. And so some sort of a learning disability, some sort of a struggle, it could be ADHD, it could be autism, it can be dysgraphia, dyscalculia, dyslexia. So most people know dyslexia, but I know dysgraphia was a huge one for me. That's where they're struggling to write by hand. They can spell the words verbally to you, but they can't actually write them by paper, or they can write words. They just may not be able to get sentence and grammar punctuation down on a paper. They may not be able to write the letters very easily. Their hands may tire. They may struggle with like tying their shoes and doing their zippers. Different things with the ends of their fingertips. They might be a very strong athletic child, but still struggle with, you know, the shoelaces, cutting with a knife at the dinner table, things like that. So that can be dysgraphia, dyspraxia, dysphagia. I can't remember the other one. There's one that's actually for reading, and dyscalculia is the number sense in kids. And the thing is they may be so good at certain things. Like they might be the most brilliant reader and then struggle with math. And it's struggling because it could be a learning disability, and they're able to cover these things up for a while. It might not be dyscalculia. It could be that they have great number sense, but they can't write out how they get an equation. They may be doing crazy high level math and they can tell you the answers, but they can't write out the step-by-step on how they got to that answer. They may not be able to write it out by hand, or they may not even verbally be able to tell you how to get it out. And so these kids, for the longest time when they're young, we're like usually quizzing them verbally on how to do things. And all of a sudden when they have to write it down in class, they can't, and they're a failure. And those can cause traumas. They can really affect a child. So understanding all about that, and then you get into the executive functioning struggles as well, where it could be the executive functioning that as they're asked more to do more things, and they're trying to do more things, that they just start falling apart and they can't follow them and they can't do them. Or their brain thinks a bit different. The brain needs questions asked instead of written, taking them in. where things that they were so good at now seem to be a struggle. So covering those up goes into the trauma category as well, and also causes a whole bunch of stress. And I know I had a client as well that in class, they had dysgraphia. And in class, I mean, they're reading these huge chapter books that were grades ahead. The teacher said, this kid is smarter than I am. Like, I honestly don't know what to do with them. This child, though, was having outbursts in class. Also was not, anytime there was anything to be written, they did the bare minimum, like even under that. And the teacher would say, like, come on, like, you need to write more, like, write 3 or 4 more sentences. And they'd be like, no, I'm not doing it. That's it. Like, no yelling, screaming. They would just look at the teacher and go, no, I'm not going to do that. And they only realized later that the kid couldn't do it. And it's hard to connect because sometimes with these kids, their knowledge of reading, their knowledge of like vocabulary, you can verbally ask them how to spell words, or they can maybe write out the individual words up to college level, but then they can't write more than a sentence. And because dysgraphia and stuff is so unknown, they don't understand it. Like, a lot of teachers are not, I mean, how can they? Truthfully, like, I have so much respect for teachers. I do not know how they can know all of the diagnoses, all of the struggles, all the different ways of brains, the different ways brains work for like 30 kids in their classroom. It's impossible, which is the reason I actually pulled my son from school, was because I didn't feel that a teacher should have to, well, I mean, first off, he would need attention all the time. And I couldn't expect that a teacher could do that for him all the time. But also, I'm sitting here still to this day learning more and more about how his brain works, about what helps him, about, you know, how to, you know, do even more for him at every stage as he's getting older and learning more and getting into deeper subjects and getting into like more test writing and all of these things. I'm learning how to figure all that out. How's a teacher supposed to, when I'm only thinking about one child and they have to think about 30? So it's just, it's a lot. And there are some phenomenal teachers out there that can do it, that are just, call them the unicorns and these amazing angels. But honestly, it's not something that most people can when you're dealing with a lot of these things, when somebody has all of these things that I'm listing. The one other thing too, there's more than that, but the next one is losing or being competitive and not being able to lose. And this is where it's been a huge understanding for me in the last 6 months of this. So this is an executive functioning struggle. And this is where that child may not at all remember when they're doing things, when they're doing a sport, all they see are their losses. They don't remember that they may have won 80% of the games. They only see the 20% of losses. It's a part of their brain that isn't processing that. We just assume that they're seeing their wins and seeing their losses, but they're not. And that's where it's taking those steps back and pulling it in, which actually this, I think, is my next episode. I believe I have it planned, is all about, co-regulation. So I think, So that's, I think, what I'm doing my next podcast episode on. So I'm not going to dive too much into that right now, but really understanding losing competitiveness, how they don't see it the way we see it. And it's where we're expecting them to be steps ahead, because most of the kids in their age group are already steps ahead in being able to see and understand, you know, the wins and the losses they've had and stuff. That child still doesn't. So there are steps to take and ways to help them and to work through that. Starting off with collaborative games. There is a book, which I'll write, is the Co-Regulation Handbook. I'll add that to the show notes as well. So the Co-Regulation Handbook by Linda K. Murphy, there is a chapter in there on winning and losing, which has been eye-opening for me, super helpful for me. And I'll be breaking that down in the next podcast episode. Another one is change. Actually with losing and competitiveness too, this could be if a child gets a 98 or a 99 on a test because they lost 2%, 1%. Like this is where that perfectionism also goes in. They only see the losses and not the wins, not the gains. So these are things where we assume that just because a child is very academically smart, just because a child may be so aware of their surroundings at times, that it's really hard to grasp that they actually are behind on some of these executive functioning things. And that's where I was saying earlier that like the higher deviations, some that goes on the gifted scale, the more they have different struggles. Oh, what's that book, that show, Sheldon? What is, what's the adult version of Sheldon? Well, you know, Sheldon, like brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He's PG, profoundly gifted. And he struggles with the day-to-day stuff, right? Struggles with change, which is my next thing to talk about too. So that's the thing, the higher gifted somebody is, the more that they have these struggles. And then those kids, somebody like a Sheldon would probably pass the gifted, but there are kids that are in between there. Maybe their ADHD is kicking in, or their ability to their speed of how they respond to things, or the way that the test is asked is not the way their brain works. But if they asked it in the way their brain worked, they'd be a genius. So that's where the school's gifted testing fails. Truthfully, it's where it fails. A lot of these kids that are very smart and also have extra needs as well. And that causes a lot of stress for them in the school system. There's also, when we're getting into executive functioning as well, there are kids where what they're saying is not wrong. They just don't realize that it can hurt. So at Pokemon, there is an individual who I know struggles with friends at school, and like at Pokemon, she's a very good player. She will say something like, why don't you concede? Because your deck, my deck, like just statistically, her deck is way stronger than their deck. It's just how decks go in Pokemon. Like certain ones are stronger against other decks and all of that. And just happened to be the one that somebody else was playing against hers, just happened to be a weaker deck to hers. Although both players were strong players, and she'll say, why don't you concede? And she's not saying it to be mean. She's the nicest kid. Just there's that executive functioning, but she's brilliant, right? So that's where we have those stressors too, where they don't necessarily see life or the day the way that we do. So change was the next one. So if you do watch Young Sheldon, see how much he hates change. There are kids that don't deal well with change at all. Change in schedules, change in routines, change of going outside. You may have a child that asks you the night before, what are we doing tomorrow? They need to know in order to make sure that they're okay and prepped and ready for it. And then you have these other kids that are so creative, so adaptive, just go with the flow and we'll go anywhere and do anything. It's fascinating. And you may find too, that once you get your child to the thing, they have a blast, and you know they're going to have a blast. It's the getting them there. And that's part of the executive functioning struggle, is adapting to change. And there are strategies and things to help with that as well. They may never be fully okay with all changes and all speeds, but you can start learning as a parent how to make it the best situation possible for them, to have the least amount of stress possible in that situation, and to get them adapting to some change. Another thing is if they're tired. Some kids really struggle to shut their mind off and fall asleep, which can be a magnesium deficiency, by the way, which makes sense if they're stressed all the time or they're on the go all the time. ADHD, they are like so high energy that they could be like flying through magnesium. And just a side note on that, when I'm saying magnesium, I'm saying magnesium biglycinate, B-I-S glycinate, or a 3-N-8, not a citrate. Citrate will loosen bowels. They may also wake up in the middle of their sleep, not get like full chunks of sleep. There are many reasons for this. And that's where like, it takes me really chatting with a client to find out what their routines are, what they're doing. Could be things they ate. It could be things they're doing in the day. It could be thoughts that they're having. It could be like a trauma related situation. It could be, vitamin, stress, mineral deficiencies. It could be blood sugar dysregulation. Like it could be so many different things. So it takes me a bit to really dive into that with somebody to find out if they're, you know, what they are doing for sleep. And so then we get into screens. I have done some episodes on this and I'm going to have to do another one because we just had a situation in our house, which is fascinating because I have implemented so many tools and been doing things. But when you have a child with impulse control, which is an executive functioning thing, when you have a child that gets sucked in so fast, so hard, and so deep, it hits them when their stress systems are different than others. There are some kids that are perfectly good with screens and some kids that really, really get sucked in, pulled in fast, and it's not. And these are things to note, but that can really test their stress system. So I need to get out the other end of that before I'd be ready to do an episode on it, but it's one that I think I do need to do for you guys. And next thing is being bored or overwhelmed. So when you have a child that is gifted, that is learning, that, and our school system goes at grade level, and some kids are not good bored kids. I have one that's a not good bored kid, and I have one that kind of likes it because he's not being pushed and he knows he's going to get like not pushed out of his comfort zone. So he's like, okay, I can just sit here and I'm fine with this. So it's quite fascinating with boredom, how it can act. But if a child day in, day out is way ahead academically in one subject or all subjects, they could be academically ahead in one subject, but then also have a learning disability or not be able to like fully, you know, as I was saying earlier, implement that or like write it out or finish that subject, even though in their mind they're like way ahead of it. They get so bored. Like, there was one guy on the internet once that just tried to do nothing for, I think, 24 hours to kind of show what it's like for a gifted child who is not being stimulated at all in school. And there is a fine line. Like a lot of these gifted kids that do, that are ahead, many do struggle with social emotional skills, and they do need that should definitely be the priority in their day. But if they're absolutely having to sit through lesson after lesson after lesson of subjects that are like so boring for them, it can start causing behavioral issues. It can start causing those outbursts, causing anxiety in them, not wanting to go back if they're not being stimulated. Same thing with the overwhelm. If it is a child who is struggling with subjects, who has a learning disability, or even the gifted with the learning disability in there, and they're overwhelmed with a subject all of a sudden, that can make the anxiety and the outbursts like even worse. I have next covering up a learning disability, which I already covered. I did also cover an HSP, a highly sensitive person, where somebody seems very sensitive. They may also be sensitive to touch, to tags in their clothes. I have one child that totally dresses for feel, for comfort. It has to be comfortable. You can't feel seams. You can't feel like the printing on shirts. Can't feel any of that. You don't want to feel tags. You don't want to like all of that. And that can be part of being highly sensitive as well. There's a book that down, Highly Sensitive Child by Elaine Aron, A-A-R-O-N. Elaine is E-L-A-I-N-E. I think it's Dr. Elaine Aron. Reading that book, I listened to it on audiobook and my kids were around. And it was fascinating because they'd be eating breakfast and sometimes I'd be listening and be like, hey, I do that. Hey, that's me. And I know I like the child one. I didn't actually like the adult one of that book, The Highly Sensitive Child, or Your Highly Sensitive Child, I think. I'll put it in the show notes. That book was very fascinating in seeing them, but I love the child one because if you're highly sensitive, you have been since a child and you'll start seeing things that you've always done. And you're like, wow, this explains a lot. It also, once you understand it, it actually helps bring some of the stress off because you feel like you're really different. Feel like you may not fit in because of all the things that you feel and see around you, or the way that you see or feel things around you is different when you're highly sensitive. Thing is that highly sensitive kids are the ones that are going to change the world. They're the ones that are going to make a stance. And it's amazing once they actually learn about it and learn about it as being a superpower. And the last thing that I do have for today, although there are more, I had to stop my list of giving you these hidden stressors. The next one is not enough or too much mental stimulation, which I did talk about being bored or overwhelmed. And that can be with anything. So like a child definitely needs to be stimulated in order to love learning. Not too much though. If it's something that's too tough for them, they may not want to learn it. And if it's too little, they may not want to learn it. And they get bored. And they just lose that oomph. They might start getting a little anxiety. They might either disconnect or they might start having outbursts. So making sure that there is enough mental stimulation around them as well. We do tons of audiobooks. We do all kinds of different podcasts that learn all kinds of things. DM me, email me if you want my podcast list. There's so many of them. There's meditation ones, there's stories, there's science, Greeking out is phenomenal for Greek mythology. And now they're getting into all kinds of other mythology. There's so many different podcasts, even some adult podcasts my kids love. How I Built This is all about businesses and entrepreneurs. And they talk about the trials and tribulations and how they failed until they made it, which has shown my son about failure. Under the Influence is all advertising and marketing, like So Many Good by Terry O'Reilly. There's so many great podcasts. If you want my list, let me know, but we do so many things to stimulate the brain in so many different ways, getting outside and doing things, playing board games, getting them to help cook, prepare meals, doing things around the house. So many different ways to start teaching and helping these kids to keep them mentally stimulated in ways that help to start inspiring them and where they can get these ideas that will change the world. It's just absolutely amazing. All right. That was a pretty good list of nervous system things that can actually set off a kid's nervous system, and they're kind of hidden, that can cause kids anxiety and outbursts. I'm just going to go through the list really quick for you again. So we have hearing too much auditorily. That's an auditory processing struggle. Visual, taking in too much visually, memory processing, either too much memory processing or memory processing struggles. Quite a few kids of different processing levels. Toxins, environmental toxins with the sense, nutrient deficiencies, gut issues, executive functioning struggles, traumas, perfectionism, losing competitiveness, change, sleep in one sense or another, screens, bored, overwhelm, covering up learning disability, being highly sensitive, empathic, intuitive, and having not enough or too much mental stimulation. All right. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you have gotten something out of this. Hopefully, I'm really curious to hear if you could let me know, either email me, support, my email's in the show notes, support@andyclark.com. It goes right to me. And let me know which of these spoke well to you, maybe for you and or your kids. And let me know how it went for you. And hopefully this has helped you see different ways that you can maybe start helping your kids manage the stress system, to start understanding them a little bit better. If there's any that you want me to dive into more here, let me know and I will create podcast episodes on that. Again, we do have the Facebook group that I've just created, Kids with Big Emotions. That's where you can always chat with me and come in there as well. And I'm hoping for it to get to be more parents that have kids with big emotions, so I can start learning more about what it is that you want. You can have that community as well that will excite you, the community that helps you feel like or see that you are not alone. So come in and join that. If you're not on Facebook, totally get it. I don't have it on my phone. So just if you are on it, I do not answer right away. I will not be on it. And I just set it up. So I'm just starting to get posts and stuff in there. So if you do request to join, it may take me a day or two. I need to be in the office and set that time aside in order to be letting people into the group. And I'm excited to have you there. So join that group, email me, DM me, and let me know how I can best support you, what you resonate with the best. I'd really love to know. I really am here for you. So however I can best do that, I am here. Wait, before you go, if you found this podcast valuable, please consider liking and subscribing. Your support helps others discover these insights too. And if you're ready to transform your sleep and stress management and would like to see if we are a good fit with one another, let's chat. The link to my calendar is in the show notes below. Let's connect and start your journey to calm nights and strong days now. Until next time, sleep peacefully and stay resilient.